So just a couple of introductory things I wanted to mention, just that this is a paper that this paper is part of a larger project I'm working on, my dissertation, entitled tentatively, extremely tentatively, Canned History, American Newsreels and the Commodification of Reality. In this project, in the larger project, that is, I'm interested in the ways in which the newsreel and its unique mode of address shaped the ways Americans were viewing and viewed the world afterwards, both literally and figuratively. So in that, to that end, I look at newsreel as a genre, as well as its modes of production, exhibition, and promotion. So the research I'll be presenting today is from the last chapter of that dissertation. I always start a dissertation at the end. And as you'll see, it sort of focuses on the ways the newsreel was taken up, that newsreel mode that I mentioned was taken up by African Americans as a tool in the political struggle for racial equality. And I'll be showing a few VHS clips that I have, and hopefully they're interspersed into my remarks, and hopefully that'll work out. And if it doesn't, well, I think it will. Okay, so this is the paper. In November of 1942, All American News launched a weekly newsreel entirely devoted to the activities and accomplishments of Black Americans. Over the next 10 years, the company produced the newsreel as well as a series of short films focusing on the achievements of African Americans in various fields, including the Negro in education and the Negro in industry. Produced by Emmanuel Glucksman, a so-called white angel, and employing the skills of African-American writers, directors, and cameramen, most notably William Alexander, the All-American newsreel held out a promise to Black Americans that the achievements and contributions of their race would finally be represented and acknowledged on film. Implicit in this promise was an unspoken faith in the power of representation. In the racial politics of the 1940s, the visual power and authority of the newsreel seemed to present a potent tool in the battle for the uplift of the race. In this paper, I'll be drawing on a collection of 39 All-American newsreels from 1944 and 1945, discovered in a leaky garage almost 50 years after they were made and acquired by the CBS News Archive several years ago. These films offer a unique record of African-American life and culture at mid-century. But All American did not see its purpose as a simple chronicler of African American achievement. As we shall see, the newsreel adopted a specifically pedagogical address aimed at promoting the values of hard work, discipline, and self-improvement. By looking at how All American deployed this pedagogical address, and in particular how it used the unique rhetorical devices of the newsreel to do so, I hope to show how these nonfiction films worked as a crucial site for negotiation, contestation, and ultimately accommodation of racial inequality. So the first clip, please.
American News brings you our people's contribution to America and freedom.
So you can stop now. So from the opening credits, the All-American newsreel announced its pedagogical intent. Its slogan, quote, All American News brings you our people's contribution to America and freedom, directly addresses the spectator and points to the film's efforts to represent the African American community as both patriotic and industrious. The visual nature of the didactic elements to come was underlined by the use of the eye motif, which is a nice connection between our papers. The superimposition of footage within that eye alerts us to the ways in which the visual qualities of the newsreel were crucial to the pedagogical aims of All American. The politics of looking literally framed the content of the film. By taking up the newsreel's unique rhetoric of display and evidence, All American hoped to promote race pride, offer a model for behavior and self-improvement, and provide evidence of African-American participation in the war effort. It was through combining the visual rhetoric of the newsreel with a direct address that All American produced its pedagogical mode. Before we consider the rhetorical aspects of this pedagogical address in more detail, it's worth asking to whom this address was directed. The second person pronoun, you, in the introductory titles addresses the viewer directly, but crucially leaves open the racial identity of that viewer. Like other race movies of the 1930s and 40s, All American's audience was almost exclusively black. It's difficult to know exactly how widely the newsreel was exhibited, but in November 1943, Glucksman boasted that 4 million people saw his product each week. He told the American Cinematographer that All American was, quote, seen regularly in 365 of the 452 civilian Negro theaters, end quote, and added that films were distributed to 70 military camps throughout the country and were even being shown in Africa. While these numbers point to a fairly extensive distribution system, they suggest also that few outside the black community were watching the newsreel. Nevertheless, the address of the opening titles remains somewhat ambiguous. The phrasing, "bringing you our people's contribution to America and freedom," left open the possibility that All American also aimed to address a white American spectator. After all, given the almost complete absence of black faces from the major studio newsreels, the notion of bringing the news of the African-American war effort to white audiences made a great deal of political sense. The potential doubleness of this second-person address draws our attention to the identity of the disembodied eye that frames the footage of these, quote, contributions to America and freedom. Does the eye belong to the black spectator? Does it simply represent the eye of the camera through which the audience is invited to look? Or does it stand in for the critical eye of white America? Such a slippage seems to evoke the self-surveillance W.E. Du Bois famously described as double consciousness, that, quote, sense of always looking at oneself through the eyes of others, of measuring one's soul by the tape of a world that looks on in amused contempt and pity. As Jane Gaines has pointed out in her work on the race movies of the 1920s and 30s, Du Bois' analysis takes on new meaning when thinking about race in the context of black film spectatorship. Suddenly, she writes, quote, one of the foundational statements in race theory appears as film theory, addressing the question of the execution of power through the trajectory of the eye. But while Gaines extends this theorization to argue that race movies offered black audiences a chance to look at themselves through something other than the distorted lens of white America, All American's pedagogical address may have reinscribed the self-surveillance logic of double consciousness, even as it aimed to overcome the distortions of mainstream representations of African Americans. But what do I mean by the pedagogical address? In its most obvious form, this mode addresses the viewer directly and offers explicit instruction. With the exception of voiceover commentary, direct address in the newsreels of the major Hollywood studios was usually in the form of a speech by a politician or other public figure. But in the films of All American, officials, instructors, and authority figures of all kinds spoke directly to the camera. Instructions on filing proper tax returns, information on the benefits available through the Veterans Administration, and most frequently, exhortations to maintain good conduct were amongst the didactic messages to be found in All American News. We can see the next clip.
Judged by the little things in life. If we stop to think, we realize that it is as easy, often easier, to do things the right way instead of the wrong way. This fellow with his hat on, the posture of this girl, demonstrate what not to do on a dance floor, anywhere, anytime. While this young couple, having respect for themselves and for each other, command like respect from everyone. Most of our young people know the correct thing from the incorrect. It's just a matter of thinking. Let's not be thoughtless about our conduct. It's much, much too important. Here is our friend with his hat on. His head must be cold. And look at that girl and that gum. Now, don't you suppose these two young people are having a good time, and yet they're not offensive to good taste? This has given us a good chance to see ourselves as others see us. To which group do you belong? Let's make good conduct a habit. A good habit from now on.
Thanks. So this example vividly portrays all Americans' use of the direct address and the way it was deployed to explicitly instruct the viewer. It's important to note here that the discourses of good conduct and proper manners were hardly new in the context of African-American media or politics. Historians like Evelyn Brooks Higginbotham and Kevin Gaines have charted the philosophy of racial uplift in the early 20th century. These authors detail the ways in which middle-class black Americans and others took up the discourses of temperance, chastity, and social purity as a means to achieve a measure of social mobility and respect for African Americans. Gaines points out that these discourses often had as much to do with class as they did race, as middle-class blacks stressed the adoption of bourgeois mores as key to racial uplift. They implicitly faulted African Americans for their lowly status, echoing judgmental dominant characterizations of the, quote, Negro problem. Either way, what Higginbotham calls the politics of respectability was deeply invested in countering racist stereotypes of black Americans. Proper etiquette was just one means of achieving this goal. As Higginbotham explains, quote, respectability demanded that every individual in the black community assume responsibility for behavioral self-regulation and self-improvement along moral, educational, and economic lines. The goal was to distance oneself as far as possible from images perpetuated by racist stereotypes. Given its ostensibly documentary authority, the newsreel was uniquely placed to counter negative images of African Americans in the movies. In its direct address and elsewhere, All American attempted to do just that by modeling respectable behavior for its audience. As the preceding clip demonstrates, however, this modeling is deeply implicated in the paradigm of self-surveillance and double consciousness. Dorothy Rogers' invitation to her viewers to, quote, see ourselves as others see us, once again aligns the gaze of the camera with the gaze of white America. Here, as elsewhere, the politics of respectability and the newsreel's pedagogical address reiterate what Jane Gaines calls the, quote, execution of power through the trajectory of the eye. In addition to the direct address, All American's pedagogical mode drew on two fundamental aspects of the newsreel's visual rhetoric, display and evidence. As we'll see, although these elements were common to the Hollywood studio newsreel, All American put these rhetorical devices to very different uses. Display was crucial to the spectacular logic of mainstream newsreel. Nowhere was this rhetoric of display more marked than in the newsreel's representations of celebrity. The celebration of extraordinary achievement and the glorification of outstanding individuals was commonplace in the newsreels of the 1930s and 40s. From presidential inaugurations, sporting events, and the ubiquitous ticker tape parade, the newsreel represented the honoring of celebrity achievement more than the achievements themselves. These media events and their newsreel records work to visually mark the distance between heroic individual and the crowds that cheered them on. In contrast to these public scenes of adoration, the All-American newsreel focused its cameras on more quotidian, although in the context of the politics of respectability, no less important successes. Unlike the spectacular displays of celebrity, these displays were lessons in hard work and perseverance. Like Flournoy English, who was awarded $100 by the quartermaster for making an efficiency suggestion, or two firemen promoted to the rank of lieutenant, the, quote, first Negro fireman thus promoted in New York City, or a man born without arms who became a successful stenographer and, quote, did everything except ask for help. I could go on. There's repeated news items about individual achievement, both sort of national level and a lot of very community-based achievements. And the All-American was there to chart, high school students getting medals from the city for getting straight A's, to the DA in Philadelphia being promoted, the first black man promoted to assistant ADA or whatever. Rather than stress the differences between the audience and the personality in the news, these stories implicitly and sometimes explicitly stress their sameness. Even those African-American celebrities who might command public shows of admiration, such as Joe Louis, were most often shown in private settings. Louis, for example, was shown with his daughter as she demonstrated her abilities on the piano. While a studio newsreels displayed celebrity with the effect of creating distance between the outstanding individual and the audience, All-American displayed achievement as exemplary and implicitly pedagogical. For All-American, the achievement was something to emulate, not simply contemplate. Closely tied to the studio newsreel's display of the spectacle of achievement was the medium's evidentiary power. Again, the notion of evidence was key to the visual rhetoric of newsreel in the 1930s and 40s. In the mainstream news film, the evidentiary power of the camera was used to confirm the news. While most Americans learned of major world events through radio or newspapers, the twice-weekly newsreel capitalized on its visual authority to verify and confirm the events of the day. The ability to see for yourself the pomp of the president's inaugural parade, or the bombing of Shanghai, or as we saw earlier, the bombing of Pearl Harbor, which could even be delayed by a whole year, and it was still news, was key to the newsreel's appeal and the pleasures of looking that it offered. It was almost like being there. Indeed, this evidentiary function was directly tied to the discourse of presence. It worked to signify the presence of the cameraman and, by extension, the audience in the field of news. And so both the films that we saw this morning, the films of Julian Bryan, where he narrates his footage of In Siege, and also the clips of Al Brick, sort of contextualizing the films of Pearl Harbor through his own experience. Those are common ways that the newsreel wrote the cameraman's presence into the films themselves. In doing so, it both established and reiterated the authority of the newsreel to represent the world and the prerogative of the audience to see it. All American put the evidentiary power of the newsreel to a very different purpose. Not to testify to the presence of the newsreel camera, but to the presence of African Americans in the field of news events. Given the almost complete absence of African American news and personalities from the mainstream newsreel, All American provided evidence of the presence of black men and women in the war effort and beyond. This evidentiary function was crucial to the mission of the newsreel as it related to the politics of uplift. African-American contributions to America and freedom needed to be recorded and used as evidence in the struggle for dignity and respect. The importance of the evidentiary function of the newsreel is particularly vivid in All Americans' use of Signal Corps footage. And we have one more clip, or one clip. So Signal Corps footage of the war effort, as we've already heard about a little bit, was made available to all of the major newsreels as well as All American. But the studio reels rarely showed footage featuring black soldiers. Even when the story was General Eisenhower's visit to the troops, scenes where black faces appeared in the background were carefully excluded from the mainstream coverage, but included in that of All American. For the studios, this exclusion was ostensibly to cater to the sensibilities of especially Southern audiences and exhibitors, and to prevent those exhibitors from destroying prints in an effort to excise such scenes. Given this overt exclusion, All Americans' use of the footage became even more important. This footage testified to the fact of black participation in the military, a fact that mainstream newsreels worked hard to obscure. Along with direct address, the rhetorics of display and evidence point to the importance of the visual with respect to All Americans' pedagogical mode. As we saw, the politics of respectability were so much about weren't were so much about the crucial trajectories of a power inherent in looking at race. Not only was the pedagogical address a way to offer models of behavior and bolster race pride, it was a way to address the race problem in visual terms. And yet there were clear limits to this politics of looking. The employment of display and evidentiary power could not contain the realities of Jim Crow. As black audiences watched the All-American newsreel in segregated theaters, they must have been acutely aware of this reality. The company portrayed the world of which it was a product, segregation. In the films of All-American, black troops, black celebrities, and black middle-class bond buyers appeared in a virtually monochromatic world. But while the newsreel showed the fact of segregation, it failed to probe that reality. Racism, poverty, and social and political marginalization were simply not discussed. Indeed, racism works like a structuring absence in the films of All-American News. It, like the eye of the newsreel's opening credits, frames the achievements of black Americans. Just one more clip. So in scenes such as this, it's hard to believe that audiences would have easily accepted the demotion of a star athlete to errand boy as a model of achievement, an object of race pride. Historian of black film Thomas Cripps notes that by the 1940s, race movie audiences were growing increasingly critically aware of the genre's failures and limits. He writes, quote, watching them accompanied a mood of perverse pleasure in calculatedly laughing in all the wrong places, a sort of black nationalist politics of inappropriate behavior. In this sense, their laughter was indeed politically purposeful, a way of telling each other that they knew not only the absurdity of racism, but the absurdity of making movies to accommodate it. Ironically, in a racial politics premised so much on the politics of the visible, it is and perhaps was what went unrepresented that overshadows these images and casts doubt on the efficacy of All Americans' pedagogical address. And I do just have one tiny, tiny more clip, but that's the end.